ओम ज्ञानच निरंधस्य ज्ञानंजन शलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
Picture of Ramananda Maharaj, his picture came. So he's quite big. So Tumal Krishna Maharaj is also sitting there. So Prabhupada said, Tumal should become big like Ramananda. So the devotees kept on feeding him all the Mahaprasad, giving more. Like every 3 hours, a big plate of prasad. Prabhupada said. So of course Prabhupada meant he should become big leader. In those days that was early days. We should become big devotees. Spiritually. And materially, maybe also. But some of our big leaders have also got big bodies. All right, so we're reading chapter 18, text 13. Pancha.
Etani
Mahabaho Karanani. People say that Bhagavad Gita is a book about karma. Of course, the ultimate teaching of the Bhagavad Gita is bhakti. Within the Vedic culture, there is karma, jnana, yoga, bhakti. These are activities of civilized human beings. Those who don't even engage in karma, who engage in vikarma, they are called antyaja, or outside the Vedic system. So what is the most important? Of course, Lord Krishna speaks much about karma, but ultimately he teaches bhaktya mam abhijanati, I can be understood by devotional service. Manmana bhavamad bhakto madhyaji mam namaskaru. Krishna says, this is the most confidential knowledge, sarva guhyatavan bhuya. Shunume paramamvacha. At the end of Gita, after going through so many different subjects, Krishna says that this is Shunume paramamvacha. This is my topmost thing I'm going to say. Sarvaguhyatamam is the most confidential. That is simply think of me, become my devotee, worship me, bow down to me. So, bhakti, that is the last word in Bhagavad Gita, although so many different subject matters are discussed. Now, what does bhakti mean? Sometimes people take bhakti simply to mean some kind of feeling. I feel in my heart love. But feeling, that is not all. Feeling must be accompanied by action. Therefore, Prabhupada always translated bhakti as devotional service. Mostly the scholars, they translate bhakti as devotion. But Prabhupada, to put that in its proper context, always translated bhakti as devotional service. And in the Upadeshamrita, nature of instruction in Prabhupada's purport, he says that devotional service means activities in the forefront of spiritual life. In other words, karma or activities cannot be separated from devotion. A very simple example in this regard, it's not simply a matter of feeling or sentiment, as some people think. Feeling must be there, but that feeling will be expressed by one's activities. So this example, that a man is working in his factory or office or whatever, and when he comes home, he expects that the wife will cook something for him. At least, that's what it used to be. Nowadays, the husband comes back and he has to get something out of the freezer and heat it up in the microwave. And may not even be married like this, living with his one kid from one marriage and another kid from another marriage. Modern society is a little strange. Anyway, traditional system is the man will come home, and the wife will have arranged something for him to eat. So if he comes, and as soon as he comes in, his wife says, "Oh, darling, I'm so happy to see you. I love you so much." And he says, "Thank you very much, that's very nice. So where's the dinner?" He says, "Well, I didn't cook anything. I really love you, but I didn't cook anything. If you want, you can go to the fridge and find something for yourself." So then we'll have a case of wife beating, maybe. Because simply saying, I love you, doesn't mean anything. That must be expressed. Practical activity. So just like we see so many people in India and now throughout the world also, because Krishna consciousness is spreading all over the world and many people want to take it cheaply also in different parts of the world, simply they want to love Krishna, but no activities. I love Krishna, but I don't like ISKCON, some people say. I don't think they say in this country, but in other countries where they're more advanced,
in philosophy and mental speculation, they come to the conclusion, we love Krishna, we love Prabhupada, but we don't like ISKCON, because in ISKCON they tell you to surrender and go out on book distribution and rise early in the morning, but I'd like to sleep up till 10 o'clock in the morning and love Krishna. So therefore I don't like ISKCON. ISKCON is very bad. The leaders are all very bad because they tell you to rise early in the morning and surrender to Krishna. But we're already loving Krishna, so what is the need for all these things? So this is misunderstanding. Bhakti means devotional service. So karma, that is also within bhakti. There's different kind of karma. Generally, karma is taken to mean fruitive activities. Where someone does some work in the factory or whatever, let me get some money. Or in the field, let me get some food. And karma yoga means to work offering the results of his activities to Krishna. But another understanding of karma is activities within devotional service. As Lord Krishna says in the Gita, mat karma krin, mat paramo, mat bhakta sangavarjita, nirvaira sarvabhutanam. This is his description of bhakti. Mat karma krin. One should perform activities for Krishna. That karma, also in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, it is said, krishnarte akila chayishtitam. All chaishtita means activities, endeavors. All activities should be performed for Krishna. So bhakti doesn't mean to stop activities, but it means to perform all activities with the express purpose of pleasing Krishna. That is different from karma yoga, in which one performs what he, more or less what he wants to do, or some activities which will result in his continuing sense gratification, but at the same time he's pious, devotional, he offers the result to Krishna. So that is the difference between karma, karma yoga, and bhakti. Bhakti, bhakti yoga, the same thing. So sometimes people misunderstand, because in the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna speaks so much about karma, telling Arjuna, do your duty, follow your swadharma. Your swadharma means your own duty. So swadharma, this also has two meanings. Swadharma means, as long as one is in the bodily concept of life, he has duties connected with the body. For instance, in the Varnashram system, Arjuna was considered, he was a kshatriya, so he had his duty to fight. Or in any society, a father has the responsibility to earn money for the family, the mother has the responsibility to get the children up, bathe them, dress them. That is the swadharma which goes with the body. So that changes from body to body to body, and even in this life, that may change. One may be a brahmana in this life, a vaishya in the next life, or even within the same life, his duties may change. Just like a young girl before marriage and after marriage, her duty changes. But that's, there is certain swadharma, and in the Varnashram system that is defined. Kshatriya should do this, vaishya should do this, brahmachari should do this, sannyasi should do this. So that is concerning with the body. And swadharma, real swadharma in swa, what is one's swaru, one's constitutional position, is eternal servant of Krishna. Jiva sirup hoy Krishna nittodas, Krishna tatashta shakti bheda bheda prakash. The constitutional position of the living being is the marginal energy of Krishna, simultaneously different and non-different from him, and his duty is to serve Krishna. So karma, that should be for Krishna. And here Krishna is describing siddhiye sarva karma nam, how one can achieve the perfection of all activities. As Krishna has described earlier in the Gita, nahi kaschit shanamapi jatu tishtakya karma krit. No one can stop doing it. Arjuna's idea was, these activities, they're very distasteful, fighting with relatives and friends and superior people. It's very distasteful. Let us stop all these activities. Arjuna's misconception was that we should renounce everything, and that means stopping doing so. Don't do anything. His idea of sannyas was that stop all activities. But that is not possible, as Krishna described, that even for a moment you can't stop doing something. Even if it's only breathing, you can't stop. That's also an activity. And even breathing, there's some kind of karma involved. As stated in the previous verse, anishtam, ishtam, mishram, chatrivitam, karmanafalam, tadatyatyaginam, pritya. Those who are not renounced, those who are not in this sannyasa order of life, or those who are not in the mood of full surrender to Krishna, everything they do has a result. Either ishtam, desired, anishtam, not desired, or something mixed up. So even by breathing, there is some karmic reaction. You'll see Jain sadhus in India, they put this cloth over their mouth. Because the idea is that we may breathe in some insect and kill it. It may not happen here so much, but some places you'll find it's not unusual. There's so many mosquitoes that just you're breathing and all of a sudden you've got a mosquito in your throat. So Jain sadhus, to stop that, they had this white cloth. But still there are some germs. In everything you do, even breathing some germs, or they sweep the road in front of them so that they won't tread on any ant or any creature. But even by sweeping, there may be some tiny little creature they don't see what they kill. So you can't avoid activities. And in activities, there is some result. So Krishna is describing here, siddhaye sarva karma nam, how one can be achieving the perfection of all activities. And he's referring to Sankhya philosophy. Now, Sankhya philosophy, this means to analyze. What is this material world? What is going on here? Just like the modern scientists, they analyze. They try to see, look through their microscope, telescope, so many different scopes, to try and scope out what is going on in this world. So Sankhya philosophy, that is an accepted system of philosophy, and that was taught by Lord Kapiladeva. That was also taught by one demon who took the same name as Kapila, so it sometimes becomes a little confusing, because there's one Kapila who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead who is teaching Sankhya philosophy, and there's another Kapila who is an imposter who is also teaching the same thing. And even if you see the two systems, they look very similar. The only difference is, very big difference, is that the atheist Kapila, he comes to the conclusion that there is no God. There's no God in control. That is described by Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita also as demoniac. That's called Anishvaram. There is no God in control. Jagat Ahur Anishvaram. Asatyam apratishtam te. Jagat Ahur Anishvaram. Aparaspara sambhutam kimanyat kama hetukam. Lord Krishna says, those who are demoniac, they think that there is no ultimate principle in the world. Everything is simply there. There's no particular cause, just everything is there. And if there is any cause of any activities, it must be sexual attraction. So this is very similar to the modern scientists who say that, well, the world is just there, and it's going on by sex. This is between Darwin and Freud. Prabhupada said, Darwin, Freud, and Marx are the three biggest demons of the modern age. So Darwin gave this idea that life is just going on, somehow or other. There was some, of course, they built up on Darwin's speculations, that there was originally some big chunk, and then the chunk exploded, and it turned into liquid, and it bubbled for a few thousand million years, and then some, after bubbling for some time, some molecules formed themselves, just by chance, into creatures, and the creatures climbed onto the land, and after some time they stood up, and after some time you had Darwin talking all these theories. So there's their theory. And Freud built upon this to say that, yes, this is very good theory, Darwin's theory. And what is the ultimate principle of life? Because if you say Darwin's theory, everything's happening by chance, then what is everything going on for? What are we living for? What is everything all about? Naturally, a philosophically minded person thinks about this. What is life all about? So Freud gave the very intelligent answer, sex is the be-all and end-all. He gave the very analytical, scientific conclusion that Darwin, he is given the idea that men descended from monkeys. So Freud, he said, well, in the early days when man was just beginning to evolve and become not very civilized, pre-civilized man, used to go around in groups with clubs and clubbing different creatures and eating them. So in each group there must have been, this is all speculation built upon speculation, so there must have been one big, strong, powerful man who controlled all the others, law of the jungle. So all the other men, they respected him because he was the most powerful and they feared him. So this has come down in our genes, and therefore we say God is our Father in heaven, and we respect him and we fear him. Fear God. This is Freud's theory. It's something handed down genetically, the idea of God, from primitive man. Of course, Freud only knew the Christian concept of God. He didn't know. How could he explain genetically how the Vedic sages, they have discovered God is playing on a flute? He's not to be feared. Of course, we also have the fearful form of God, Nrsimhadev, but he doesn't appear in Darwin's theory. He's outside. They can't say how Nrsimhadev evolved, half man, half lion. So therefore they say mythology. Vedic literatures, all mythology. This is their conclusion. Of course, there are many difficulties with such a theory, because even the anthropologists, they say that a culture can be understood by its language. Language and culture are very much interlinked. That's why we find Sanskrit a very fine language. Even if anyone studies Sanskrit from a non-Mayavadi, mostly nowadays they study from Mayavadis, but if you study from a devotee, then you will become yourself Sanskrit. Sanskrit means perfect, everything perfectly done. And you'll have Sanskriti, which means culture. So you find different languages, how it's very much related with the people, just like the next door country is Italy, and the way they speak and like this with so many different expressions, it's very much indicative of their culture. Or you find German, the language is very strong and heavy, and so are the people. So language is very much connected with culture, and they have said that the more advanced a culture is, then the more complex its language is. This is principle of anthropology. Just like nowadays, even now, there are some tribes in Africa, their whole language has only 200 or 300 words. Things like eat, kill, things like that. A few different things. Water, blood, they have a few different words. But Sanskrit has vast, so many words, and the grammar is so complex, it will take you 12 years simply to study the grammar. And they're trying to say that it's all simply some fairy stories. Anyway, the point is, Sankhya philosophers, by studying, either in the ancient age or in the modern age, they've studied in the ancient system, the Vedic system, they came up with means that's described in the Vedanta. The Sankhya philosophers, they're studying, but they also accept Vedas as knowledge, and the Vedas, they give some framework with which to study the material world. For instance, just like in Gita, this is Gita Upanishad. Bhagavad Gita is called Gita Upanishad because it takes, the philosophy is based upon the Upanishads. It's very similar to Upanishadic philosophy. And the Upanishads, they are the essence of the knowledge of the Vedas. Therefore, Gita Upanishad, that is the essence of the Vedas. So in the Gita, it is described, what are the elements of this world? What are the elements? Who can say? What is the verse? Who knows that verse? I think you may know. Let's see if someone else. Someone else who studied. Kang mano buddhi evacha. Prakriti ashtadham. There are eight elements: earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego. So these elements, they don't exactly correspond to the periodic table we have of elements, that chemical, hydrogen, helium, all these different things. That means they're grouped in a different way. Earth, water, fire, air, ether. So within that means there are five basic categories of gross matter. Just like Prabhupada said, we could make deities also from fiberglass. That's not traditional. Fiberglass, that means kind of plastic, yeah, just like this mridanga. So they're asking, can we do this? Because it's not very traditional. Prabhupada said, yes, because that is a transformation of earth. That means there are eight different kinds of deities. They can be one of the elements that deities can be made from is earth. So Prabhupada said that fiberglass, that's also a transformation of earth. So in this way we see anything solid, that is earth, transformation of earth. And there may be also fire within, just like fire is within wood. Otherwise, how, when you light it, the fire comes out? It's there. And air is also there, if you analyze. If some water may be still there. Earth and ether is also, that's all pervading, that's everywhere. But basically, this is made of earth. So in this way, the Vedic philosophers, they have examined, according to the Shastra, they're taking the Shastra and trying to understand. Of course, the problem with the Sankhya system of philosophy that comes from the atheists is that, as Prabhupada said about the modern scientists also, that science means to analyze. Prabhupada said, what is it? They analyze, they experiment and they come to a conclusion. The Prabhupada said that the modern scientists, that they simply analyze and then they talk all nonsense. So that is true also in the... It's true, they just talk all nonsense. They say they analyze, they look at some thing, they dig up something, some skull, or the archaeologists, they'll dig up a few spoons and a plate and some spade or something, and then from this few things they'll say, well, this proves that here 200,000 years ago there was a civilization that was like this and like this, and they build up a whole big thing just because they found a few spoons. There's no evidence at all. So they come to so many wrong conclusions. So the same thing, those who are the Vedic philosophers, those who are not following the proper system, which is to hear from the bona fide acharya, self-realized soul, they come up with the wrong conclusion. Now, of course, according to the different, there are different schools of Vedic philosophy, Sankhya, Yoga, Kama Mimamsa, different systems, and they accept different acharyas or rishis as their acharyas, Gautam, Kanad, Patanjali, this Kapila for the atheistic Sankhya leader. So according to them, he is the Gautam, Kanad, this different, Jaimini. They are the founder acharyas, Sampradaya acharyas, of their different systems. However, in the Vedanta Sutra itself, which they accept, they're supposed to accept, Vyasadeva himself has analyzed all these different philosophies and shown how they're all wrong. So the real system of philosophy to follow is Bhagavad Gita, Vedanta Sutra, understood properly. Even Vedanta Sutra, you'll find the Mayavadis in India, they call themselves Vedantists. Generally, if someone is called Vedantist, you understand that he's a Mayavadi in India. And especially now there's Vivekananda. He has got absolutely no connection with Vedanta, even slightly. I mean, even Shankaracharya had some connection because he gave some commentary on it and he followed some principles. But Vivekananda, in the name of talking Vedanta, he's eating meat and smoking and so many different things, which Shankaracharya, he didn't profess such different things. The followers of Shankaracharya. But now they call Vedanta. Nothing about Vedanta. No connection whatsoever. But the idea is there that Vedantist means some Mayavadi. Because they're talking... Vedantists, they like to talk about Vedanta. They like to twist it this way and that way and come up with all their wrong meanings. Ultimately, they like to say, I am God. Vedanta Sutra means, I am God. After speaking so many big things, Sanskrit, study for so many years, and say so many big things in Sanskrit, Jai Shri Shri on the time. They come to the conclusion, I am God, which already, why they need to go so much philosophy? Everyone's already thinking that anyway. Even the dog in the street is thinking that, and he's wrong. He's not God. And even if you study philosophy, Vedanta, and you talk big, big, long words in Sanskrit, and you're very proud and puffed up with your Sanskrit knowledge, if you come to the conclusion, I am God, then you're a fool and a rascal. Because you're not God. Even if you can speak Sanskrit in 5 different meters, and you can even speak Sanskrit in your sleep, it doesn't mean you're God. No one can become God simply by speaking Sanskrit. They're very puffed up. Oh, you don't know Sanskrit? Huh. Then, huh, you don't know enough. Then, and they're thinking, I am God. Mayavadi means most puffed up. You'll find these ridiculous people. Big, big Mayavadi guru. He'll be carried in a big procession by his foolish followers. And he'll be sitting there. So, he's so puffed up that you could take a knife and cut up. It's so thick, the whole atmosphere. Sitting there giving benediction. And foolish people say, oh, now I've been blessed by God. Some big fat guy. So actually, it's funny one side and it's disgusting also. Disgusting that people can call themselves God, and it's disgusting that foolish people can accept them as such. Therefore, Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita gives proper knowledge of everything. Who is God? What is the real conclusion of Vedanta? How we're supposed to act in this world? Not simply imagining ourselves to be God, not imagining ourselves to love Krishna, but practical. Everything Bhagavad Gita, very practical. Krishna spoke to Arjuna something very practical. Arjuna was on the battlefield, he had his duty to fight. But he wanted to be impractical. Let me leave it off. Go away. I don't like this. But Krishna told him, Mam anusmara yudhyacha. Remember me and fight. He didn't say anything impractical. But fight, then so many bad things will come. No. And Krishna explained, if you do this, this will happen. If you do this, this will happen. Therefore, Prabhupada always used to say, this is scientific. Krishna consciousness is not simply some sentiment, it is scientific. If you do this, Krishna told Arjuna, if you think of me and fight, then you will come to me, you will please me. You will cross over all obstacles by my grace. And ultimately you will go back home, back to Godhead. So that same knowledge, Krishna consciousness, it is scientific. Sometimes people say, is it a sect or a cult? Because in the modern age, many people have dreamed up different ideas. Of course, even we could say that even what are so-called established religions, we could also call them a cult, because they're not scientific. They simply say, just like, for instance, you go to church once a week, and you, my dear God, here's a candle, here's a few dollars in the box, clean me of all my sins, okay, see you next week. This is not scientific. This has got nothing to do with love of God. This is not what Christ taught. This is not what any acharya taught. It is simply some kind of excuse in the name of religion. I am very good. Why? Because I go to church once a week. And all the rest of the hours, 23 hours on Sunday plus 24 hours every other day of the week, I'm completely sinful. I don't care at all about God. Even when I go in the church, I don't care about God. But it looks good, it's very prestigious, and it makes me feel good. So that's God's job. Giving bread and making me feel good. These are the jobs of God. So this is God. This is not scientific, therefore it is not real religion. Religion means to know God and act according to His instructions, according to the directions of Shastra. That is being told by Krishna. Here he's referring to the very deep philosophical system known as Vedanta. But even without studying all those things, if we simply know this, even without going so much philosophy, if we understand that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, I am not, and nor is anybody else. No Baba and no anything, only Krishna. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, therefore we should always think of Him, not think of my wife. Someone thinks, I've also got bhakti for my wife. I always think of her, I bow down to her, I worship her, I offer everything I have to her. That's also bhakti. That's not bhakti. That's foolishness. Bhakti means we should know who is the proper object. The proper object is Krishna. Why? Because He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. How do we know? Because He Himself comes to show, to prove it. All the acharyas, the self-realized souls, they also accept it. If we're going to be scientific, if we're going to study who is God, then we have to see what is the nature of God, that is all described in Shastra. Who fits the bill? Who can be described as God? What does God mean? Even people, they like to talk, I think God this, I think God that, I think I'm God. So many things, He's God, someone else is God, we're all God, God is dead. First of all, what does this God, what does this word mean? God means the Supreme Personality of Godhead, full of six opulences, the beginning, middle, and end of everything. Ishvara, Parama, Supreme Controller, then who can fit, who can dare to take such a title that He is the Supreme Controller? Who can dare? These false incarnations or someone thinking He's God, He can't even control when He has to pass stool. He cannot control, He has to run to the toilet. And He's claiming to be God. So God means Supreme Controller of everything. Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchit Ananda Vigraha, not stool blood Vigraha. Satchit Anandamai, full of bliss and knowledge, eternal. Krishna doesn't die, Krishna doesn't become old, Krishna doesn't have to go to the beauty parlor to get nice lipstick and makeup to make him look good. He always looks good. He doesn't have this old age, no old age for Krishna. He's always beautiful. Satchit Ananda Vigraha, Anadir Adir Govinda Sarva Karana Karana. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, we should always think about Him. And if we think of Him, what will be the result? Mame Vaishyasi Satyam Te Pratijane Priyosime. And if we think wrongly, if we think there is no God, or if we mistake who is God, or we don't care about God, then the result will be Dharma Syasya Parantapa Aprapyamang Nevartante Mrityu Samsara Vatnani. If we don't come to Krishna, then simply we have to rotate in the cycle of birth and death. Ashadadhana Purusha Dharmasyasya Purandha. So this Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is speaking to give knowledge to Arjuna, to give him knowledge so that his faith will be strong and he will act properly. And that knowledge, through Arjuna, Krishna is speaking to the whole world. So we can know scientifically, according to scripture, scientifically, practically, who is God, how to relate to God, how to serve Him, how to act in this world, so that siddhiye sarva karmanam, all our activities will result in success. If we don't act in Krishna consciousness, then simply we are defeated. Means we build up big strong body, or big business empire, big political empire, just like now there's fighting going on, Bosnia, Croatia, we want to be successful. But at the end, what will be the result? Everyone is failure. They're all going to lose. Who's going to win the war? No one. They're all going to lose. Because after fighting so valiantly, patriotically, simply they have to die. So they lost. Everyone lost. You didn't. You've conquered this land, now you have to leave it. So everyone is losing. But those who take to Krishna consciousness, they're always successful. Successful means what? You may say, I don't think the devotees are very successful. They're living in this house, crowded, no space to move. How are they successful? They're successful because they're preparing for punarjanma jayaya, to cross over repeated birth and death. That is real success. Janma karma chame divyam evam yoveti tatvakaha kagva deham punarjanma na. Punarjanma na. No more rebirth. Punarjanma naiti mam eti sojana. One who understands Krishna, he no longer has to take birth again in this material world, but goes to Krishna. So that is success, and that Krishna is teaching us philosophically, practically, scientifically. Hare Krishna. Is there any question? What did I say? I know devotees here, they like to laugh. A jolly bunch. Brahma Bhuta Prasanna Atma. They're all Brahma Bhuta, self-realized, because they're all happy. But then should also be na shochati, na kankshati. No lamenting and no hankering. I remember last time I see it, it's like a big laughing session. That's also, we should laugh at our own foolishness, how foolish we are to not be Krishna conscious. Prabhupada said, gentlemen, he should also be somewhat humorous. Prabhupada, of course, he was humorous, but general mood, grave, because we have very serious business, crossing over birth and death, going back home, back to Krishna, teaching others about Krishna, serious business. Anyway, any questions? Only devotees, no question. Please. Actually, I remember once, this was a long time ago, I think it was in 1979, it was the only time I went to Sweden. So Hari Keshav was giving a class, at the end he asked, any question? No question. So he said that if there's no question, he said it's like water. There's no movement in the water, it becomes stagnant. So he said if we're not moving our brain to think about Krishna consciousness, philosophy, there's no questions, it means our brain is still, dull. So it becomes stagnant and then all the mosquitoes will come out. Like that, he's giving examples. So what's your question?
These six great philosophers, did they have their spiritual masters?
They also had their spiritual masters. Everyone in Vedic culture has their spiritual master. But just like even in our parampara, there are spiritual masters who, even though they have their spiritual master, but they make a very specific contribution to the sampradaya themselves. In other words, they're special devotees who are sent by Krishna to develop knowledge and knowledge of Krishna consciousness in this world. Just like in the Sri Sampradaya, they say that the Sampradaya Acharya is Ramanuja Acharya. So he had several gurus, and his main guru is accepted as Yamuna Acharya, the previous Alva. So Yamuna Acharya was a great devotee. I was just reading today his Stotra Ratnam, very beautiful prayers he made. But Ramanuja, even though he taught the same thing, but he developed it. He preached it very widely, was one thing, and he also made philosophy. He wrote so many books, which everything was there already in the Sri Sampradaya, in the Divya Prabandhams, the writings of the previous Acharyas, Alvas. But he, Ramanuja Acharya, made his commentary on, especially on Vedanta Sutra, and also on Bhagavad Gita, which systematically made the commentary on the of the Sri Sampradaya. So therefore, he's, because of his contribution, he brought the Sampradaya forward so many big important steps, both in preaching and in philosophical exegesis. So therefore, he's considered Sampradaya Acharya. And after him also, there are other great Acharyas, I'm talking in that Sampradaya, Vedanta Deshika, who explained even more, explained what Ramanuja was explaining. So in our own Sampradaya also, we're coming down, our line is traced through the Madhva Sampradaya. So Madhavendra Puri, he is the root of, he's considered the root of the love of God, the highest standard of love of God, which was later developed and expanded by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who also had his guru, Ishvara Puri. And then the six Goswamis, they also had their guru, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And they systematically put philosophical writings. So each great acharyas, of course, not every guru is great acharya like that. They're all as good in the sense that they all deliver Krishna in parampara. But some acharyas in particular, they have made a specific, very great contribution. That's why when, first of all, Baladev Vidyabhushan and later Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, they wrote the names in the parampara. They only put the prominent. There are so many hundreds and hundreds, thousands of gurus in our parampara. If you see the list, there's about 25 names. No, 32 names coming from Krishna. Well, not more than 32 names, but there's 32 in time, chronologically. So these are the names of specific acharyas who have made tremendous contributions to the Sampradaya in philosophy or preaching or both. Otherwise there are many, so they all have their gurus, but just like Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj was the guru of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Now, we have to understand this very carefully when I make this statement, but because Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is not more than Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj, and if you said that to him, he would severely chastise you. But his contribution in terms of writing and preaching is, that is more, that is something he added. What Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj gave, he added to that. Of course, Krishna cannot be added to, but our understanding of him can. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur did that. And then Prabhupada, his disciple, whatever Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had done, he brought that to the world. Whatever all the previous acharyas had done, he brought that and he presented it in such a way that people of the modern age can understand, which is a tremendous achievement, because this Vedanta philosophy is very complex, not very easy to understand. But Prabhupada presented it in such a way that even lectures, chandalas, yavanas, the people with absolutely no idea of Vedic culture, not even very basic things like how to sit on the floor properly, they don't know. They sit with their feet pointing towards the guru as he's speaking. The very basic things they don't know. But Prabhupada was able to present Krishna consciousness in such a way that everyone can understand. And all the philosophy is there. All philosophy, all understanding, everything up to the highest level of Krishna consciousness is given. So in this way, these different rishis, they also had their gurus, but they were specifically established in this world, that philosophy. Even just like Shankaracharya, he also, even before Shankaracharya, there were Mayavadins. But Shankaracharya, his commentary on Vedanta Sutra, Sharira Bhasha, that became accepted as the commentary of all the Mayavadis. And of course, he not only made the commentary, but he spread it very widely. That wrong idea. Any other question? Yes, please.
He heard yesterday from some devotees that some vegetables have higher consciousness than fishes. But he cannot understand it because consciousness is manifested through activities, desires, and things like that. So how is it that vegetables have...
No, the aquatic species of life is considered lower than the plant life. The consciousness is more developed, but the standard of suffering is more. The plant life is very, very high suffering because it is there's almost no consciousness. So that is suffering. Or even more suffering, the condition of the fish, their consciousness is simply one of total suffering. That's why it's considered lower. But anyway, when you're down that low, then it's completely in the mode of ignorance. There's no consciousness, whatever consciousness is there, it's nothing nearly enough to come to the stage of Krishna consciousness. It's very, very much covered, very, very much in ignorance. So we may say, just like you may say, a dog has more developed consciousness than a mouse, but it doesn't help the dog to have more developed consciousness than a mouse, because he can't understand Bhagavad Gita, either as a dog or a mouse. So until we come to the human species of life, it's all very, very low, very highly degraded. Therefore, if a human being also lives like an animal, it's a very great waste of his life. Like a vegetable. Some people, they're like vegetables. More like vegetables than animals. So it's the greatest loss, greatest misuse of time.
It was stated that there are five causes of the activities. So
yeah, that will be described in the next verse. Yeah. That will be described next. I was just discussing the background for Krishna's statement.
When would be the best time for reading Vedanta Sutra and
reading Vedanta Sutra. This is Vedanta Sutra. Srimad Bhagavatam is Vedanta Sutra. You've already got it. Like I was saying, the Gita is the essence of the Upanishad. And we have Bhagavad Gita as it is. The Vedanta Sutra is also the essence of the Upanishads. It's based on the Upanishads. But it's in very... actually not complex, but very squashed up form. Sutra means compact, concise form. And that Vedanta Sutra has been explained in Srimad Bhagavatam. That is the natural commentary. So even if we do read Vedanta Sutra, it may be very difficult for us to understand. Even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, taking the position of an ordinary person of this material world, he accepted the chastisement of his guru, Ishvara Puri, who told him, Guru kahe, murka tumi, tomar nahik Vedanta dika, Krishna mantra japa shada, e mantra sha. My guru told me, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, that you are a fool, you are not competent to study Vedanta, you should chant Hare Krishna, which is the essence.
Mystical or wonderful or different things. Vedanta means, he means knowledge, and he means death. Therefore, that's already then Bhagavad Gita. Vedaishya sa veraham eva vedyaha, Vedanta krit veda veda eva chaham. In the Gita, Krishna says that Ved means knowledge, and the goal of knowledge is me, Krishna says. I am the compiler of the Vedanta and the knower of the Vedas. And Krishna, he's, therefore, Bhagavad Gita is praised as the topmost Shastra. Why? Because, what is that verse? Swayam, what is that? This is the essence of all the Shastras because Krishna, I can't remember exactly the Sanskrit, but Krishna directly himself has spoken. Actually, they put it in the new edition. Where is that? Yasvayam padmanabhasya mukha padmad ninasrita. And then again, twice it said. Kidasu Gita Karatavya Kimanya Shastra Vistarai Yasrayam Padmanabhasya Mukha Padmad Vinisrita. Here in the Gita Mahatmya is recommended that one should chant and study the Gita very carefully. And what need is there for studying so many different big shastras? Because this is spoken directly by Krishna himself. So if you have studied Prabhupada's books very carefully, at least minimum 5 or 6 times, and if you have found some commentary on Vedanta Sutra by our acharyas, you can read it, and you may understand it, probably you won't, because it's very complex philosophical language, and there are so many things. There, without a very
Even the commentaries which are given, Sanskrit commentaries, they've been translated into English. But even then to understand it's very difficult, because I'll just give an example. Just like we devotees, we're discussing among ourselves. So we're talking about Paramatma and this guy Blugt, and we have our own language. And there are certain things that are understood by them. He's in the modes. Now if we say that, even if you say it in Croatian, someone who's Croatian won't understand what you mean, because it's a very technical language which refers to things that we understand. Just like two people who understand about computers, they may be talking about motherboards and PCMCIA slots, and they're talking English, but because it's a very specialized language, someone who doesn't know about computers, they won't understand what he's talking about. So the same thing in the Vedanta commentaries, there's so many different things referred to, which unless you have a very deep background of philosophy, you won't understand it. Unless you've studied so much. So you can do that if you like. You can study, you can go. Actually, you should learn Sanskrit, which will take you 12 years or so. To understand all these is very, very deep, and very complex, and very technical. But everything Prabhupada has given. Don't think that Prabhupada hasn't given. Sahodra Maharaj, he gave one, his Vyasa Puja offering this year. It was very interesting. He was analyzing. Prabhupada was talking with some so-called philosophers. And Prabhupada was, they wanted to talk all this big complex language, and Prabhupada was just giving very simple answers. And Sahodra Maharaj analyzed in big complex language, which these so-called philosophers like, that Prabhupada, by his simple answer, he'd cut through all the verbiage, all the sophistry, and come to the actual point of the philosophical argument, which even the philosopher himself didn't understand, and given the conclusion. But we may think that Prabhupada's just saying something very simple, he doesn't understand it. Prabhupada understands it fully, more than the so-called philosophers, because he knows the real philosophy. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he knows all other philosophies also. Prabhupada met with so many different people. He was living in India all his life, very traditional kind of upbringing he had, and he never met with scientists and Western philosophers and so many different things. But when he met with them, he defeated every one of them, because he knows all philosophies. Why? Because Prabhupada described that himself. How can I meet with so many different people? Because I know Bhagavad Gita as it is. That Krishna describes, Yomam eva sammudho janati purushottamam sa sarvavid majate mam sarvabhavena bharata. Krishna says, Yomam eva asammudho. Who is not a fool who knows me, and he's not a fool. It means if you know Krishna, you can't be a fool. There are some people who think they know Krishna, but they're fools because they don't. They say, yes, Krishna, this. Krishna means black, and black means unknown. That means we can't know Krishna. So many different funny things they say. So who knows me? Janati Purusho. Who knows me? How? Some people say, oh, Krishna is immoral, this, that. No. Janati Purushottamam. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One who knows that, Sasarvavid, he knows everything. Therefore, he worships me fully in all respects. And Krishna gives intelligence. Someone who goes and speaks about Krishna, who has to preach. How are you going to preach? There's so many, what people are going to say? So many different things. You go and preach. Study Prabhupada's books. Krishna will give you intelligence. If you only know this Bhagavad Gita as it is, Prabhupada wrote. That is, Prabhupada says, if you cram this Bhagavad Gita as it is, that will make you a very good preacher. Now, it's a very interesting case. There was one sannyasi, ISKCON sannyasi, preaching in South India. Now, anyone who's gone to South India knows that even now, there are people who are cultured, philosophically minded. Sometimes people come up to you and talk to you in Sanskrit and so many things. Or they may come up to you on the street and say, Swamiji, can you explain this verse? And he'll say something in Sanskrit, and you're supposed to know it and give a reply. So this one devotee, he was preaching in South India, and he sent a letter to Prabhupada, the purport of which was help. I'm preaching in South India, and all these people, they're saying different demigods and Mayavad, and what shall I do? Because after all, he just joined Hare Krishna movement 5 years before, and before that he was doing, we don't know, we don't want to know. But now he's a preacher of the highest truth, Krishna consciousness, Bhagavad Gita as it is. But he's going to meeting people and say, you don't know, you don't. I know Sanskrit, and he'll quote so many things. So Prabhupada said, he wrote back a letter and said, don't worry, if you know 40 verses from Bhagavad Gita, you can defeat any philosophy in the world. And he gave an example. Just like people will say, demigod worship. We should worship different demigods. So you ask the people, do you accept Bhagavad Gita? And Prabhupada said, they'll all say yes. So you simply quote this verse, not even one verse, half a verse. Antavattu phalangte isham tad bhavat yalpamedasa. Anyone who worships demigods is a fool, Krishna says. So that's that philosophy defeated. So there you are. 40 verses, you can defeat any philosophy. So if you like, as a kind of mental diversion, you can study Vedanta Sutra. If you like, if you have time, if you have intelligence, you can do that. It may not help you very much. You may find one or two people in the world who you can discuss it with, like Suhotra Swami, but he's already convinced that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, so you don't have to preach to him. So you can get all your Vedanta. This is Vedanta, Bhagavad Gita as it is, Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Nectar of Devotion, Sri Upadeshamrita, Nectar of Instruction. This is Vedanta.
It is stated that there are two different kinds of impersonalists. Some are aparadis, mayavadis, whose conclusion is insulting to Krishna. And there are another kind of impersonalists, like four Kumaras, who are not offensive to Krishna. So he wants to know what kind of conclusion is there, what is their conviction of those who are not insulting Krishna. Because they are supposedly, they also believe that God is impersonal and therefore...
Yes, but they're not offensive to Krishna. They believe that God is impersonal due to lack of knowledge. They follow the path of meditation, seeking to understand the conclusion of scripture, but they don't have knowledge of Krishna. Nowadays you get knowledge of Krishna every street corner, someone's distributing Bhagavad Gita as it is. We're very lucky. But otherwise, bahunam janmanamante gyanavan mang prapadyate, you may not get. To get a Vaishnava guru, teacher, that's not always you'll get. So they may be following, but they may be following some path, and they've come to an impersonal conclusion. They don't have knowledge of Krishna. They're not offensive. And the test is that as soon as they come in contact with Krishna, immediately they're attracted. Four Kumaras, Shukadeva Goswami, they are the example. They're already Atmaram. They're detached from material sense gratification. They're fixed on the platform of soul. But they don't know what the activity of the soul is. Therefore, when they come in contact with Krishna, Atmaramas Chamunayo, Nigrantiya Arukrame, Kuravantiya Haituki Bhaktim, Itam Bhuta Guno Hare. When they come in contact with Krishna, they immediately become attracted and they give up their impersonal conception and they surrender to Krishna. Now the opposite are Mayavadis who, they have knowledge of Krishna, but they say, oh, Krishna, he's also Maya. Therefore they're called Mayavadis. They are offensive to Krishna. They think that Maya is also covering Krishna. Krishna is a product of Maya in Sattvagun. They're that kind. They don't say he's Rajagun or Tamagun. He's in Sattvagun, and in this way they are offensive to Krishna. So that is the difference. You won't find any such impersonalists. Now all this modern impersonalists, they're all Mayavadis. Even Mayavadi, original Mayavadi Sampradaya, they're very strict following principles. These kind of hippies who wander in and say that everything is one, I'm God, you're God, they're not actually Mayavadi. They're just dogs, that's all. They don't have any proper, they don't have any philosophy. Mayavadi means there's some status to that. So many things they have to follow.
Naša sampradaja gleda Krishna, Brahma, Narada i tako dalje. Znamo kako gleda taj korijen. Sada znamo drugim sampradajama da je to Lakshmi, Shiva i Kumara, ali ne znam kako točno izvede korijen svaka tih sampradaja. Recimo, kako su oni dalje predavali otprilike to znanje. Ako zna nešto više o tome, nigdje nisam našao što pravi na knjigama. Kako izgleda korijen drugih sampradaja?
We know in our sampradaya that knowledge comes from Krishna through Brahma, therefore we are called Brahma sampradaya. We also know that from Brahma it goes to Narada, from Narada goes to Vyasa, and like that. In the other sampradayas we know also the first acharyas like Lakshmi, Kumaras, Shiva, and that. But he wants to know how it was transferred from this personality, whether you have some information how it transferred.
Just like you see, our sampradaya is called Brahma Madhva Gauriya Vaishnava Sampradaya. That means that Brahma spoke to Narad, Narad spoke to Vyas, Vyas spoke to Madhva. So in this Kali Yuga, on this planet, the Brahma Sampradaya is coming through Madhva Acharya. So it's not only on this planet, in this Kali Yuga. On other planets, in other yugas also, the Sampradayas are coming down. But in each Kali Yuga, especially, or any yuga, there'll be a Sampradaya Acharya. So Madhva he heard from Vyas, and he disseminated the knowledge. So similarly, in the different Sampradayas, Vishnu Swami, Nimbaka Acharya, Ramanuja Acharya, their line is there. That they are the Sampradaya Acharyas, and at some point, just like in the Nimbaka Sampradaya, Narad is there. How does it come? It starts off with the four Kumaras, then comes Narad. No, it starts off with Hamsa Avatar, then four Kumaras, then Narad. And then he speaks to some sage, I can't remember exactly, on this planet. And then eventually it comes down and Nimbaka Acharya spreads it. He takes all the philosophy, writes the book, and spreads it. So in this way, previously there was communion between the higher planets, the demigods, and this planet. Either people from this planet were going there, or people from those planets were coming here. Especially Narad used to come. He's still coming, but he doesn't show himself so much nowadays. But in this way, the knowledge is handed down. And on other planets, also different sampradayas will be going on. And in different Kali Yugas also, it will be going. After this Kali Yuga, then these lines, they will die out. Madhva Gauriya Sampradaya, that will be gone. But still Brahma is there, Narada is there, Vyas is there. And again, when the time is right, that knowledge will be established. Of course, Vyas is there. At the end of this Kali Yuga, the next Dwarpa Yuga, another Vyas will come. So in this way, the knowledge will again be passed down. Any other questions? Sampradaya is going on. Sampradaya means a method for disseminating the knowledge. So this Sampradaya, the Brahma Sampradaya, in this Kali Yuga, became manifested strongly when Madhvacharya took up the preaching. Not that it starts, it's always there, but it came out at that time. Brahma Sampradaya is there throughout the universe. The teaching is going on. Wherever there are Vaishnavas, there is preaching of Krishna consciousness. Bali Maharaj is in the lower planetary system. Antadev is below all the planets. There are so many Vaishnavas there also. In our vision, if we're going to be mundane historians, they'll say that this Sampradaya started at such and such a time. The mundane historians will write that Madhva, he started this, and then they say he went to see Vyas, and in this way they trace the mythological source. They ascribe a transcendental source. This is the mundane way of thinking. Knowledge is always there. But from time to time, it is distributed in human society. That is the work of the Sampradaya. Sampradaya means, da means to give. Prada means gives very nicely. Sampradaya means fully. So Sampradaya means that which gives knowledge fully, properly. That's one meaning. Any other question? Gita Mahatmya. There's one by Vallabhacharya, and this one may be by Shankaracharya. No, this is not Shankaracharya, this is Vallabhacharya. As much as I recall.
To somebody, he asked
before. Yeah, why should they question? Who's going to question, is it authoritative or not? If you say that it's accepted by all the acharyas, then what do they know who the acharyas are anyway? Is Gita Mahavya known in the Vedic culture? Will question it. Any sampradaya, even the Mayavadis, is Gita Mahavya. We also accept Shankaracharya's Gita Mahavya. No one questions. What the Gita is, that the Mayavadis, they'll give different conclusions. But the greatness of the Gita, no one will contest that. As I was just saying, that Prabhupada, you're saying, you ask the people, do you accept Bhagavad Gita? Yes. Everyone will accept, at least superficially. Then what is the message of Bhagavad Gita that we have to discuss? Any other question? I'll finish that.
Yeah.
This is some prasad. Not for eating. This was used by Srila Prabhupada many times in Hyderabad on his cushion. He used to sit like this. So recently that was changed, that cushion. And I got some of the cloth, so wherever I go, I give. Mm-hmm. You can keep in your telephone. You have a picture of Prabhupada. I think the best thing is put inside the frame and make a little note. This is Prabhupada Prasad. Otherwise, someone, after some years, someone may change the frame. And what's that doing in there? Yeah. Prabhupada Prasad.
Because we have a little collection in there.
Oh, you do? You have to show me.